singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face.
Hello and welcome to Sister Act. This is a podcast where two sisters talk about movie musicals. I am one of those sisters. My name is Jackie.
I am the other one. My name is Nicola.
And today we're talking about one of the greatest films ever made, Singing in the Rain. That's what it says on Wikipedia, but it's true.
It is true, yeah. Watching this, I was just thinking, like, every other, like, golden age movie musical we've watched has not been very good. Like, is that, do we call it the golden age? I mean, we call it the golden age because, like, there were a lot of them. But really, it's just this one.
It's not the golden age of musicals. It's the golden age of Hollywood, because it's like when you have these sound stages and these casts that the studios own. It's just a particular era of filmmaking where the studios had a lot of power and like producers had a lot of creative control in a way that like is, you know, like it was just like the time period when it would be like, the Warner Brothers own Jimmy Stewart, so if Universal wants to borrow him, they have to go to Universal to even cast him. Like, the studios were making the movies, and they were making each other's movies, and they were... It was golden for them. And they owned these big lots, and they had house teams of production designers who would be going in and making them these beautiful sets.
But I feel like golden age also has a more specific context about movie musicals as well. That it was a time when movie musicals were given like budgets and value, and like we've talked about, like you could just have a movie with Marilyn Monroe where she sings a couple songs and everyone will go see it.
Yes, this was the movie musicals in that period of time for like cultural and economic reasons were the Avengers movies of that time, where you would just, if Marilyn Monroe was in a movie singing a song, people would come see it. Much like if Paul Rudd is in a little spandex suit throwing a punch today, it's like, people will probably see that.
But anyway, this movie is so great.
I've been open about not thinking that the Gentlemen Prefer Blondes was good. But I've liked some of the other Golden Age movies, musicals we've watched. I guess, like, some of them are, a lot of them are racist. Like, Showboat.
You know what also, I was also thinking about that I really do think we should watch Calamity Jane. I think that's a good movie musical of the time, because I was also thinking almost all of these movie musicals are about people making musicals. But Calamity Jane is very, I mean, it's, even that one sort of is, because one of the characters, like, wants to be a singer. You can't escape it. But I do, I don't know. I think that's a good one that is not just all the songs are because we're in showbiz, you know?
Yeah. Add it to our, we just picked a different movie for next week, but add it to the list. Add it second on the list. I guess let's just talk about what happens in this movie.
So we start on the red carpet.
Yes, it's the premiere of, what is it called?
I could not tell you. It's been like over a week since I watched this, because I was sick last week, so we didn't record. Maybe if we had recorded last week, I could remember, but honestly, I don't think so.
I just looked it up. It's The Royal Rascal. We started the premiere of The Royal Rascal. I was like, I feel like it's something alliterative. But it's the premiere of a movie, and there's a like a tabloid lady, and she's introducing everyone as they arrive. And the first person who arrives is Zelda something, and her old man boyfriend. he's like the most eligible bachelor in town, and he's like 100 years old. And you're like, yikes, poor Zelda. And then this European lady and her foreign husband slash boyfriend arrive, and they're just like scary and Eastern European, and you're like, ooh, Olga. and then the best character in this movie arrives, and his name is Cosmo Brown, and no one gives a shit about him.
But I do agree that he's the best.
I love him. He's the absolute highlight of this movie for me. He's just so good. I love Donald O'Connor for this performance.
It's not even necessarily Cosmo that I love. It's really Donald O'Connor.
But it's a little bit Cosmo, too. I mean, it's definitely Cosmo that I love. He says funny things.
Because when I think he's gay. Of loving Donald O'Connor...
I don't know anything about Donald O'Connor.
I think about this role first.
He's got great personality when he's dancing and smiling. Mm-hmm. He's got a very emotive face. He's just got like cute little round cheeks. It's both the character and the performance.
But he is Don Lockwood's best friend, and he like plays music for the silent films.
Yes, this is a silent film premiere. It's like it's like 1928. The Depression is coming, but we don't touch it in this movie.
And then the stars that everyone's been waiting for come out. So it's Don Lockwood and Lena Lamont. And everyone's like, ooh, are they dating?
And they're like, we'll never tell.
Don Lockwood's like, let me tell you the story of my life.
I think the woman asks him for it. But he's lying. He's like, we're seeing the reality of his life, and he's saying, like, I was raised in the finest country clubs, and we see him, like, sneaking into pool halls with Cosmo, and he was like, we both went, you know, we went to the theater with our parents and watched beautiful ballets, and it's them, like, sneaking into the movie theater, not paying to go watch some, like, monster movie or whatever. And then, you know, they're like, we toured with the finest symphonies, and we see what their tour was them doing, like, vaudeville acts and getting booed.
I can jump over
the moon from above, fit as a fiddle and ready for love. And this number rules. They're tap dancing and they're playing violins, and at one point Don takes the bow for Cosmo's violin, and he's trying to get the bow back. They're jumping on each other's backs.
It's just so great. The comedic dancing of this movie is just top notch. Why don't we do more comedic dancing nowadays?
You gotta change the world. You gotta bring back the good old days.
And then he's like,
we find out
we were working as musicians on silent films.
He says, he tells a lie about how he was spotted, but we see the reality play out, which is that he became a stuntman because he was just willing to throw his body off of cliffs and do extremely dangerous things.
There was
things.
A guy who, well, I don't even, I don't remember what he said, but what we
that
see.
Guy died.
What we see is that they're playing music for the silent film, and this guy just, like, gets knocked unconscious or something. And then they're like, oh,
he's
no.
He's dead.
He's dead? All right.
And they're like, for sure. Because the director's like, we've already lost three people making this movie.
They're like, what are we going to do? And he's like, I can do a flip if you need me to. So then they're like, get this guy in costume. And that's how his career started in silent films.
Yeah, and he's, like, clearly shaken up, but he's not going to say it. He's like, what else can I do for you? And then he crashes a plane into a building. He's saying in the voiceover, like, my roles in these films were sophisticated. And then it's, like, him riding a motorcycle off of a cliff, which, like, you know, Tom Cruise could never. Actually, he does. But before Tom Cruise, there was Don Lockwood, who did all his own stunts and drove a motorcycle off a cliff. And then he gets... Then we just see a scene where the studio head, R.F. Simpson, comes to the lot and says to Don, hey, I heard that you did all the... Well, first we see... Oh, the context is that he says me and Lena's, like, love started then, or, like, we respect each other and liked each other a lot. And in the scene, he goes up to Lena. Lena doesn't say a word this whole time, but it's kind of, yes, like, she's like, such a good, like, caricature actor.
And then Don, like, cuts her off. It's like, what I think Lena wants to say is...
Yeah. I actually don't even think that's happening. Does that happen in this point too?
I think so.
During the speeches, but here I think you're not even noticing really that she's not talking.
Oh yeah,
like, and it's done more subtly.
They give after the movie, yeah.
You're yeah, because right. He goes up to her on set and is like, "Hey, it's been really great to like work with you and meet you." And she's like reading a book or something, or like turns and like just gives him a look of such pure disgust. And then R.F. Simpson comes up and is like, hey, I heard you did all the stunts on this movie, boy. I'm gonna give you a big role in the next one. And then Lena comes up to him and like taps him on the shoulder because he had said like, I would love to take you out on a date. And when she gave him the look of disgust, and she like presents herself to him like, hey, handsome. And he's like, are you free on Friday? And she nods and he's like, well, I'm busy. And then she looks so miffed and kind of like gestures frustratedly his direction, and he's like, and our relationship has been like that ever since. But it's totally wordless because there's a reveal of her voice later. But the interview wraps up and the lady's like, wow, you two cuties, get in there. And they go and they watch the movie. We see the end of the movie. He's doing a bunch of wild stunts. He jumps over a banister. He's getting attacked. Lena's like, no, Pierre, or whatever his name is in this one. Philippe! It's Philippe in this one.
And then they...
They kiss in the yes. movie, and then they come out and they give their speeches. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, then this is when they give a speech like, oh, thank you so much for watching the movie, whatever. Our next movie is going to be called...
Dueling Cavalier.
Yes. And she starts to say something, and he's like, from both of us, goodbye.
He says, us screen actors are never good at words, so instead we'll just act our gratitude to you. And Lena's like, this fucking guy. And then they're both like blowing kisses. And then as soon as they get off stage, she's like, what's the big idea? What do you think I am, dumb or something?
And
she tells the PR guy, he's like, just write me a speech. Next time I'll give the speech. And they're like, oh, Lena, please keep your horrible voice down.
And then they go to the after party. But Don gets bombarded by fans.
Yeah, so Cosmo's going to drive Don to the after party. And Lena's like, oh, should we go together because we're in love? And Don is like, girl, I hate you with all of my heart. Like, he's so explicitly not into her. And she's like, oh, you're so cute. And he's like, no, I wish you were dead. And then he leaves with Cosmo. They get in the car. Cosmo drives like 4 feet. And then he's like, I don't know what's wrong with this car. It hasn't given me trouble for 6 hours. Something like that.
And then
people
says,
notice Don.
Yeah, so they're all chasing him, and Don says, call me a cab. And Cosmo goes, all right, you're a cab.
And so Don has to climb up on a car and then leap onto a trolley. And then he lands right
into,
in.
Kathy, what's her name?
Kathy Seldon.
Played by Debbie Reynolds. He jumps into her car and she's like, oh my God.
And she's like, I recognize you. You're that criminal. I've seen your photo everywhere. You're like one of FBI's most wanted. And she's like screaming and she pulls up to a police officer and the police officer's like, Don Lockwood.
I'm a big fan.
And he's like, you're a lucky lady to Debbie Reynolds. And she's like, God, it's so dangerous to be a woman.
But then she kind of
apologizes.
You know, I think I've seen like one or two of your films, but you know, once you've seen one, you've seen them all, right? And he's like, what the hell? That's mean. And she's like, well, I'm a serious actress. I don't think what you do is very serious. Yada yada. Try to play it cool. But he takes this to heart.
And she's initially kind of smitten. Like, she offers to drive him where he wants to go. They both are, like, kind of into each other, but he plays it too cool, and then she gets, like, kind of jealous and defensive and says purposefully mean things to him. And then she drops him off to go change into, because she drops him off at his house because his suit has been torn apart by the ravenous fans. So then she keeps driving and she goes to the party where he's going. And they tell her to go into the back. And then he shows up late at the party. Cosmo's there. He flirts with the woman for exactly 1 second. And then Don shows up and he walks right away. And you're like, this guy's gay. But what a delight. You know, he's not like a criminal. He's just the best character in the movie.
And then, does anything of interest happen before the cake?
Don asks Cosmo, am I a good actor?
Oh, yeah.
And Cosmo's like, yeah. as long as I work for Monumental Pictures, I say yes. And Don's like, no, seriously, I'm sad. Make me feel better. And Cosmo's like, oh, of course. I'm your best friend. And then RF is like, hey, everybody, we're going to watch a movie. And then they make some, like, Hollywood joke that I guess where they're like, it's never a Hollywood party if you don't watch a movie at it. Which I'm like, is that true? That's so funny.
I know. Like, you all just and watched a watch... movie.
Yeah, that's what they said. That's what Cosmo says. And the movie is a man saying, this Hello, is a demonstration of a fucking picture. Notice how my lips and the, voice is it are the man synchronized.
RF, whatever his name is. Because then they're like, ah, you're joking. Come out from behind there. And he's no, like, it's no, like a no, different I'm man. Standing right here.
It's not RF. It's just like the guy who made the product who's selling it. But the Zelda, the actress, says, Mr. Simpson, come out from behind that curtain. And then he is right behind her. And he's like, I'm right here. But she thinks that he's just, like, doing a voice.
And then they're like, yeah, some other studio is gonna do...
Like, the Warner Brothers are gonna do a whole picture with this. It's called the Jazz Singer.
But we think that's
stupid. It's gonna be a tremendous flop. Yeah. They all watch this technology and then they all make fun of it. And they're like, this won't make a wave. And Cosmo says, that's what they said about the horseless carriage. And everyone's like, we don't get your subtle humor. But, you know...
Because if there's one thing Cosmo's known for, it's subtle humor. And then they're like, anyway, let's have cake. I don't know. And they bring out this big cake. And then Kathy jumps out of it. And she and all these other girls are singing All I Do Is Dream of You. And Don's like, well, 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 serious actress, huh? And she's like, leave me alone. I didn't know you would be here. And then she, like, tries to... He's really picking on her and begging her. And then she, like, tries to throw cake at him. But he ducks. And then she hits Lena. And Lena freaks out and gets Kathy fired.
Don tries to find her, but can't. And Don does not realize that. So then the next scene is we're on the lot and we see all these movies being made. There's like a train robbery and a football game and some racist thing happening in the background. And then they get to their lot and they're here. He's here to film the Dueling Cavalier and he's chatting with Cosmo. And Cosmo's like, hey, it's not your fault that that girl quit her job and you've been looking everywhere for her. Like, she made her own choice. She wanted to leave her job. She doesn't want to see you. You know, why don't you just watch me do a funny little cabaret number? And he sings, make him laugh. And then Don's like, wow, thank you. And also, I think it's because she's like, it did wound him that she said those things about his acting. So he's like, hey, you do the most important kind of acting of all.
You make him laugh. You do.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
So then he's like, okay, thank you for cheering me up. I'll put on my best attitude and I'll go to work. And he and Lena are going to shoot the Dueling Cavalier. And on set, while it's still a silent film, that's when he finds out that she got her fired. So they're doing the movie and they're doing the like gestures of loving each other. But he's like, you horrible rattlesnake. Mm-hmm. I, like I said before, wish you were dead. And she's like, I didn't like that she was flirting with you. And he's like, I loved it, you idiot. They're just fighting, but with like smiling, loving expressions on their faces. But then RF comes in and he's like, shut it down. We're pausing everything. We got to, like, the jazz singer has been a huge smash. We have to reassess and maybe turn this into a talking picture or something. And then I think we just go right into
random thing.
then this music starts that's like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- like a marching band, and there's just all this stuff happening on screen, and you're like, yeah, whatever. Like, I couldn't really explain to you narratively what's going on, but it washes over you in a delightful way. And then it transitions into this, like, Macy's commercial where they're singing, where Kathy's in the background group, and they're singing Beautiful Girls.
I didn't know it was a commercial because it's like 10 minutes long.
It must be a commercial because they're like, for playing volleyball, like, on the beach.
You can be beautiful in this outfit and this outfit. Yeah. I mean, it seems like a commercial, but I was just so confused because it goes on for so long. I guess that's how commercials work. And Kathy is there, and they're like, oh, who's that girl? And they're like, oh, that's Kathy Seldon. She was at that party and threw cake at Lena, and she got her fired.
No, I don't think they know that about her. They're just like, the director says, like, oh, I'm glad you noticed her, too. I liked her. I really think she's great. I was going to cast her as the kid's sister in Zelda's new picture. And RF's like, yeah, do it. I love that girl. And then Cosmo is also on set here and sees her before this conversation happens. He spots her and he's like, I'll be right back. So he goes and gets Don. We finish watching this 10-minute musical number about clothing. You know, it's a fine song. It's mm-hmm. it's interesting to watch. The dancing's good. The outfits cover a wide range, and they're interesting to look at. And so then RF goes up to Kathy after and is like, Kathy, I'd love to offer you the job.
And she's like, oh, I'm afraid you probably shouldn't do that because...
No. She says, yes, I would love to. And then Dawn runs on set and she's like, all right, I'll just pack it up now because I know what's coming for me. And RF is like, what's happening here? And she's like, I'll save you. Like, I won't make Don explain it. I'm the girl who threw that cake at Lena. So I'm sure that Don's here to tell you that you shouldn't work with me. And Don's like, no, you should give her a raise. I think it's wonderful that she threw that cake at Lena. And so she gets the gig. She's going to be Zelda's kid sister in Zelda's new picture.
And then they're talking afterwards. And she says something about how she's seen all his pictures. And he's like, oh, I thought you'd only seen one and that they were all the same. She's like, well, actually,
I've actually seen 10, 8 or 9.
And then it turns out that she's like a big fangirl. And he just loves that.
Yeah, she mentions the fan magazines. And he's like, oh, you read the fan magazines. And she's like, well, you know, at the doctor's office and... you know, maybe I read 4 or 5 of them a week.
I don't know if they're supposed to be, like, their own ages. But I feel like the fact that Gene Kelly's, like, twice Debbie Reynolds' age, this scene feels weird to me. Because I'm like, this can't be romantic if you're so much older than her and she's a fan, like, obsessed with you. I don't know. It's weird. But he loves it. He's like, oh, you're obsessed with me? Well, now I love you.
Yeah, I do. I wasn't bothered by it as much watching it this time, but I have felt that discomfort before. I do kind of think, like, there's something about, he's, like, insecure, and she has the power to make it. Yeah, I don't really know how I feel. There's something about, like, her they're both kind of being a little bit vulnerable, because I think he sort of says, like, that, like, he mentions that it kind of, like, messed him up, that he was really trying to find her and blah, blah, blah. And she says, like, I did say some awful stuff that night. Like, it kind of feels a little bit balanced.
More vulnerable than he is, but... it's fine. It's whatever.
Yeah. And then actually the thing that has always bumped me a little bit more, then he's like, I have something I want to tell you, but I can't do it without the right environment. So he takes her into a soundstage, puts her up on a thing, and like turns the wind on. And something about Debbie Reynolds' performance here, this is where she seems like the most uncomfortable to me for some reason. There's like a look of sadness in her eyes at one point when they finish the dance. And when he like puts her up on a thing and he's like, you know, I've got lights and beautiful things and it's the sunrise and it's dawn, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, okay, now can you say what you wanted to say to me? And it just feels like small and kind of like vulnerable and sad. It doesn't feel like, oh, wow, hooray, the characters who love each other are getting together. There's just this, there's like something that feels a little bit off about it to me. But they sing a love song, You Were Meant for Me, and they do a lovely little dance. And, you know, like, and from that point on, they do seem to really love and support each other in a mutual way. But that sequence, like, the song where they confess their love is like, what's wrong here?
There is something, it's just like, I feel like I kind of checked out for a bit. And then the next scene is them like kissing outside the theater. And she's like, oh, I love you so much. Like, I support you, but we're going to go in separately because our romance is a secret. I was like, whoa, that happened fast. Even though they just sang a whole song about it, I was still kind of taken aback by how in love they were.
Yeah. But they are in love. Mm-hmm. That's and honestly, it doesn't read that scene. There's like a tension in it and the weirdness of the dynamic. You know, I do have issues with Debbie Reynolds being cast in this role as an 18-year-old. Just in general, I think like it is troubling to me when young girls are cast as leading ladies in romantic roles against men who are not.
Especially when Gene Kelly is also has so much power on the set.
Yes,
did a lot that of is like also, choreography like, and wasn't he like a co-director?
Mm-hmm.
And you know that whole story about him like making her cry, filming Good Morning. Do you know about that?
Yeah. No, it doesn't seem good. Just, I don't feel like it was good for Debbie Reynolds to be in this
like,
movie.
I can't accurately assess if they have like chemistry or if I believe it because I'm thinking about like how miserable she was being around.
No, I do believe it. Like they seem to have chemistry in every other scene, but there is something in that scene where I'm like, it doesn't play totally for me. But then like Good Morning, the other scenes where they're in love with each other, I'm like, yeah, you both sort of like tap into something and it works.
Yeah, I guess not chemistry, more just like that I am thinking about that. So
mm-hmm.
Do I believe it, even though I think they're both acting love well? I can't fully buy into it, I guess.
Yeah.
But before, that's her next scene.
I think
scene,
I was also attuned.
Stuff that happens before that.
I was kind of attuned on this watch to the ways that Don is like not, you know, like when you watch like Seven Brides for Seven Brothers or Showboat with the stuff with that guy who's like, or even like Pajama Game, like a lot of these musicals, it feels like the romantic guy is just like perfect. And like, and then it, until he goes nuts, it, like he's so good until he makes his big mistake and then he has to come back from his mistake.
I don't know if I agree with that assessment of
that's not how I perceive the characters, but I think that's how the, like, they are written to be, right? Like the show believes that the lead guy of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers does nothing wrong. Like, he's just romantic and nice and, you know, he's so charming that this girl would just follow him up to this murder house on the top of a mountain until he, like, you know, snaps and makes his mistake and is angry and then needs to be, like, brought back into the fold. And similarly, the Pajama Game guy, even though he's, like, you know, like working for the boss and undermining the union, like we're supposed to be like, oh, he's so charming.
I don't know. Like, my memory of all of those movies is a little like blurred But my memory of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers is that he's not very charming. He's just like, I want a wife to cook and clean for my seven brothers. And she's like, all right, whatever. I cook and clean. I have no life here. Let's go. And then she falls in love with him later.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure they're extremely in love and they sing a whole love song on their way up to the house. And then they get to the house and it's a reveal that he has seven brothers that she has to cook and clean for.
All right, maybe not.
I might be wrong. I also am a little hazy on my memory of these. The reason I mentioned it, though, is just because I do think it's, like, interesting. Like, the first thing we learn about Don is that he's a liar. And then in the second scene that we really see with Don, he's, like, immediately so, like, a random woman off the street is like, you're not very good at acting. And he's like, oh, my God, am I bad at acting? Like, he's, like, so insecure. And the people who comfort him are not even like, hey, you're great at acting. They're like, hey, you're great at dancing and playing the violin. Like, maybe be more authentic in your skills. Like, he's not supposed to necessarily be good at
he's
acting. And I don't
more
even
more complex of a character. I wouldn't say that those characters are portrayed to be perfect or like portrayed to be perfect in the eyes of the characters, but they're just not as interesting or have like flaws that they actively deal with, I feel.
And I think that their like issue is more tied up in just like the solution is the woman, in a way that is not so true for Don. Like, in some ways, Don's crisis is initiated by the woman, and then Kathy, loving him, does not resolve it. Like, once they go... So the next thing that we see is they go to the premiere of...
His love for Kathy makes his life a bit more complicated and difficult, as opposed to, oh, a woman comes in and solves all my problems. Not like she's difficult, but just that he could have just been successful and not cared what happened to her, but he did, you know?
Yeah. Yes. One, I think, like, his love of her challenges him to, like, be more authentic in other ways. But I also think, like, his romantic gesture at the end is not the completion of his arc. Like, he has to sort of, like, self-actualize outside of her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know that she is in the same situation. She doesn't really self-actualize it at all.
Yeah, no.
She's kind of like an Ariel in that she's just great and there for the journey.
Yeah. She doesn't even get...
She has a clear want. Like, it's not like she's not a character, but yeah, she's not necessarily someone who like is exploring and reckoning with her big fatal flaw.
She doesn't get one of those songs that's like, even though this man is awful, I can't help but love him.
Yeah, exactly. But I just kind of like that. I find something interesting in the shape of that. Like, I find something a little bit more real and compelling about their relationship because it's not like it's important to Don and it informs Don's journey, but it's not like it's not just like the woman is woman as solution to flaw in self. Which I makes me, even though I also am experiencing all of the baggage you're experiencing about like, was it good to cast an 18-year-old against a 40-year-old man when that 40-year-old man was the director and was apparently like at points allegedly very hard on her, made her cry filming stuff. Like, I'm experiencing all of that too, but I think I can like set it aside in this movie because I find the journey that they're on is interesting enough that I'm like drawn in by it in a way that if it was the same dynamic but it was Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, it would be unwatchable for me, I think.
And the thing is that I mean, this is kind of what you're saying, but that Seven Brides for Seven Brothers is just about their relationship, whereas if I don't fully buy into their love, there's still so much of this movie for me to buy into.
Yeah.
And also, I do buy into it. It's just that I feel a bit uneasy about like thinking about the filming of it. Anyway, so they're turning the Dueling Cavaliers into a talkie. And this is classic, this scene. Of all the
this has my favorite visual gag in this whole movie.
Which one?
So they're the problem
there's
they're
so
having
many
with
visual
they're...
gags, it's so great. and
yeah, okay, let's just go through them, but I'll let you know what my favorite. So they're making the movie, but they're having a problem where Lena's not speaking. They've put the microphone in a plant, but every time Lena turns her head, they're missing the audio because she, and they're blaming Lena for this, like she shouldn't be moving her head, but it's like, no, like, she's got to
move. Who doesn't move their head when they're talking?
But and it's not even like the camera is facing, is like that it would be a good sight, that it would be a good shot if she was just speaking to the bush the entire time. It's like not an eye line with Don, and it's also not like an eye line that makes sense to the camera. But so they put it in the bush, the audio
just
sounds
can't
terrible.
Follow instructions, really, is the issue.
Yeah. So she's going, she's saying her line, and then we're in the director's booth, and it's like, Pierre, you have come! Because like, she's going back and forth, and the director's like, cut! So they move the microphone.
Then they put it in her dress. I'm sure I know what visual gag you're talking about. What's his name comes in, and he's
RF
like,
comes in and he says,
wire?
Who put this wire here? It's dangerous.
And he yanks it.
And someone just goes, shh. And he goes, he ignores the shh, and he picks up the wire and he yanks it as hard as he can. And he throws Lena. Lena yeah. flies into the air. But that's the second time. The first time they put it in the dress and it's on her, they're hearing her heartbeat, so they move it onto her shoulder.
And then they...
And also at one point, Don is just like, hey, can I not say the lines?
Yeah, he's
and
like,
the director is like, I literally don't even care.
I just want to say what I said when we were filming silent films.
Which was, you rattlesnake, I hope you die.
So he just says, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. Instead of the dialogue. And then, the scene ends with her getting knocked over, I think.
Yeah.
And then do we go right to the premiere?
I actually wonder if we messed up the sequencing of this. Maybe that's when You Were Meant for Me happens. But
no,
I feel like
she's
next...
wearing the dress. It's right after.
Oh, it is immediately after. Yeah. You're right, you're right. It does feel weird that they just go right into it. Oh, I think we skipped that there's some coaching that happens. Yeah, we did. So before that sequence, they're both seeing dialect coaches, Lena and Don.
When do they say, you're my lucky star?
That's like when they're dubbing the vocals, right?
No, that's Would You.
Oh, you're right.
Maybe this is just out of order, because they sing it at the end and it's not at the end here. So anyway, yeah.
But they definitely sing Moses Supposes.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking that when, like, if we were missing something or if it just goes right to Moses Supposes, I think it does. So they both have dialect coaches. Lena's really struggling. But then
I can't stand him, is what she keeps. And the dialect coach is like, I can't stand him.
And
Don's having he's so successful. He's just killing it. The dialect coach is like,
yay. These tongue twisters. And then Cosmo comes in and he's like, hey, what's up? What you doing? Some tongue twisters? And then the coach is saying them and Cosmo's behind him making silly faces. And then they're like, ooh, Moses supposes his toes are
his
roses.
Toes are roses. But Moses supposes erroneously.
A rose is a rose. A toes is a toes.
Moses. And then they just do a killer dance number.
It's so good. I think this is the highlight of the whole movie for me.
This is also a moment where I'm like, see, Don is such a little poser. Like, he ultimately just wants to be, like,
exactly.
a rowdy, messy
well,
boy with his bestie.
They change up the movie because they're like, this is what you're good at, Don.
Yeah.
And then they're, like, knocked, taking everything down, putting it on the coach. And then it ends with they take the... Because there's signs all over this guy's office with, like, mouth shapes and, like, the vowel sound that it makes. So then they take one that says A, and they end the song by going, hey! And I was just like, I've never seen something so funny as that. I don't know. and then they film the movie.
Yeah, then they're making the movie.
Then the scene I was talking about where she's kissing, where Kathy's kissing him, and they're like, oh, we should go in separately so Lena doesn't freak out. They're at, it's like a preview for the movie. It's not the premiere.
Yes.
And it's awful.
I'm trying to think, when do they sing You Are My Lucky Star? Because maybe
they
that does
sing
happen
it at the very end. When the reveal happens and she runs away and he's like, everybody, the woman that you love, her voice is actually that woman, Kathy Seldon.
My
lucky star.
Maybe that is the only time they sing it. Okay. So yeah, they go to the premiere of the movie. Kathy says, like, I'm going to be leading the cheering section because she's not going to go sit with them. And then everything is a disaster. The pearls are too loud.
She's like playing with her pearl necklace and it's like. And everyone's making fun of
his dialogue. And when he says, I love you, I love you, I love you. Yeah, and also the mic is on her shoulder, so it's getting louder and louder as he gets closer. So it's like, I love you, 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 I love you. And then there's a moment where something goes wrong in the projection booth where the sound and the video get out of sync. So then someone's going, you know, Lena's saying, yes, no, and the guy's saying, yes, but it's out of sync. So then the movie is over. As people are leaving, they're like, that was the worst movie I've ever seen. I'll never trust that Don Lockwood.
I'll never see a Don and Lena picture again. It was awful.
And they're like, brother. And Lena's like, I liked it. Because she has no taste. So they go back to the house. Don's made everyone big sandwiches, and they're eating them. And he's... He's like,
he's talking about how his career is over.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not really that good at this. And honestly, it kind of aligns with the, but like, you're not like, you're not wowed by his performance. Like, it's not like him or Lena are particularly better than the other in that. Like, mm-hmm. Lena's voice is crazy, but he's not, like, you don't like feel inspired or moved by his performance there. Like, I think that Gene Kelly is doing a very good job of being not a good dramatic actor in this role. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And his friends don't lie to him. They're like, hey, you know what? You're really good at, like, other stuff, like tap dancing.
Yeah, the thing is, though, that I would say Gene Kelly as Don Lockwood not acting is also not a very inspiring dramatic actor. Gene Kelly
really only
comes to life in the musical numbers, I feel.
Yes, I don't know if I think that, like, oh, is he acting well? Like, are there layers to this? Or is there truth at the core of this?
He's worse when he's playing a character that's doing dramatic acting, but he's not particularly good himself.
Yeah.
I think there's both happening.
But, so, who suggests it? Kathy? Who suggests they make it a musical?
I was hoping you would remember, because I'm like, how did they get to that?
I think Kathy suggests they make it a musical.
He's just like, I don't have any talent. And she's like, yes, you do. You're a great dancer. I don't know. She suggests it, but how does it come up?
You know what? I think it's like he says, like, yeah, I'm just going to have to go back to playing the frickin' violin, doing mm-hmm. the vaudeville circuit because my career in film is going to be over. And then they're like, well, maybe that's not so bad idea. Like, maybe you should go back to that, but do it in this context. Like, what if we just made this a musical? And he's like, a musical.
He's like, that's a great idea. Oh, but the only problem is that. Oh, wait,
no,
that,
first
that
they say, that's an incredible idea.
This is the best
Mark this
day
date.
Of my
it's
life.
March 23rd. And this day will go down in history. And then she's like,
actually
it's
March
24th.
It's
We've
the
talked the night away.
Well,
good morning. And then they do a whole little dance number, and they end up they flip the couch over, and they're sitting, laughing, having a great time. And the Don's like, wait a minute, we can't make this a musical. And they're like, why not? And he's like, Lena. And everyone's like, Lena. And then Cosmo has this great idea. And he's like, wait, I'm about to be brilliant. And
he gets
Kathy.
The idea from the moment they were talking about how the funniest moment or the best part of a movie was when...
I think Kathy says, I liked her best when she was no, no, no.
So then Cosmo goes behind Kathy and is like, oh no, he's like, Kathy, go opposite. Behind me and sing Good Morning. And then he's lip syncing and Don's like, what am I seeing? And he's like, have Kathy sing and Lena lip sync. And they're like, oh, that's a great idea. Oh, wait, but no, Kathy, I won't let you do it because what about your career? And she's like, it's just this one picture and then I'll be a movie star. And he's like, all right, let's do it. But we can't
and
tell
he's like,
Lena.
Great idea, Kathy. And Cosmo's like, yeah, great idea, Kathy. And then...
Or no,
Kathy
I think
kisses
she,
him and he flips over backwards.
She says, great idea, Don, and kisses him. Oh. And then he's like, yeah, great idea, Don. And then she kisses him on the cheek and then he flips.
He makes a cute little face and flips over backwards. He's so good in this movie. So then they're making this movie that way and they pitch it to RF. And RF gives Cosmo it says, remind me to make you a scriptwriter. And then he tells Cosmo, remind me to give you a raise. And Cosmo's like, RF, can I have a raise? And RF's like, ugh, this guy. But they pitch it to him and he's like, I don't know how Lena will feel about it. And they're like, you're the boss. Don't tell Lena, you know, make your own decisions. This man makes not a single decision on his own. He's so easily. I love how spineless RF is. If anyone gets in his office, they can totally change the course of movie history. So they make this plan. RF signs off. He says, as long as Lena doesn't know, they're like, oh, don't worry. We'll really sneak her around. So they have her. They're doing all of the dubbing. And then I think the next like big thing that happens is that they're finishing up the... When do they pitch Broadway Rhythm? I think we see Broadway Melody and then we get the scene where Lena finds out, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And they pitch, when they're pitching the thing to Cosmo, I mean to RF, they do this crazy thing where they're like, so we're going to have half of the movie be in the modern era. Like, we're going to just make a totally different thing.
This makes no sense. They're like, so actually the movie is going to be this guy is like a Broadway actor, but he's washed up and then he's backstage reading A Tale of Two Cities and a sandbag falls on his head and then he imagines he's in the French Revolution. I was like, why? Why couldn't it just be a musical set in this time that you've already filmed everything in?
And they just don't do that. Like, when the movie ends in universe, it does not go back to the frame story.
I think they said that because they wanted to put this stupid dream ballet that has absolutely nothing to do with anything.
I like
in
this
it.
Sequence, but it is so crazy because they show, it's like they just finished watching a cut and RF's like, well, it's looking good so far, boys. What's left to do? And they're like, we've just got to shoot this one huge, crazy sequence. Let me describe it for you. And then we see this like 10-minute dream ballet that's like Don, it shows up in schlubby clothing and
like,
he's in the big city
dance. And then he dances
and then,
for a long time,
and then there's this mobster who's flipping a coin and he's got this beautiful girlfriend who Don's kind of into, and then Don's career really takes off and he goes to a club and he sees that beautiful woman and he goes to talk to her and then they have
he
a dream ballet
within
the dream ballet.
Like in love, but then really they're not. And she's with
and
the
it looks like
guy.
The set from, it's like the same lighting and like background as when he does the You Were Meant for mm-hmm. Me scene with Kathy too, which is so interesting. And then he comes back to reality and that woman's got the gangster coin and she's not interested in him. And then he gets kicked out of the club. But then a little young whippersnapper just like him comes
with someone
up.
Else.
Yeah.
And then
we
come
back out to
G. Kelly's face and he's like, and that's what we have to do.
And RF's
like,
just like, I can't really picture it, but I hope it'll work on screen. And Cosmo's like, oh, it'll work even better on screen. And then we never deal with that again.
Yeah.
But I don't mind it, even though it's crazy. And then we see Kathy's recording some of the vocals.
No, Kathy and recording the vocals happens before that.
They're singing something.
Oh, you mean...
They're just, yes, just doing dialogue.
She's recording the singing vocals of Would You, but then they're recording...
No, I think there's a... I think Would You happens as a song between Broadway Melody and the pitch. So they pitch it, and then we see both Lena and Kathy singing that song. Because we get some of Lena like, and if the boy were I... And then you go back to Would You.
They pitch it, and then we cut to Would You...
Yes.
And then
we get Broadway Melody. Yes. And then we get Kathy just doing some final dialogue where she's like, can't stand it. Like, that stuff's happening.
They're recording stuff together, right?
It's just her recording, but Don's there.
Oh, okay. And then Lena comes in and is like, what's going on with Zelda,
that turncoat.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, thanks, Zelda. You're a real pal. And Don's like, thanks, Zelda. You're a real pal.
And she's like, this girl, I don't like her. And he's like, well, I'm going to marry her. And she's like, no, you're not. You're going to marry me. And he's like, I don't like you.
So Lena goes to
the guy.
First she just goes to the press off screen. But then the PR guys are in RF's office and they're like, RF, why'd you do this? Why'd you give all these quotes to the magazine saying that Lena Lamont is a wonderful singer? We had this whole campaign planned that was going to unveil Kathy Seldon. You can't change things up like that. And he's like, what? Oh, I didn't do this. What's happening? And then Lena comes in and she's like, yeah, that's right. I'm not dumb or something. I did this whole thing. And she says, like, she's got her contract in her hand. She's like, according to my contract, I'm in charge of my own press, not you. So you don't get to say what my image is. And I say my image is I'm good at singing. And if that girl, Kathy Seldon's so good at singing for me, then you're going to make her sing for me forever. Yeah. Like, you shouldn't have her be in Zelda's big picture.
Oh, no, Lena, we can't do that because we all really care about Kathy's career. She's like, no, you don't.
and he's like,
I guess I don't.
So then it's the premiere of the Dueling Cavalier has been renamed the Dancing Cavalier, and we go to the premiere. It's a huge success.
Everyone loves it. Everyone loves Lena's voice. She's the standout.
Yeah.
And then Kathy and Don are hearing about this issue with Lena that she's gonna have to be her voice forever, and they're both upset, but then they've got an idea. So then
the movie's a huge hit, and Lena's like, get ready, Kathy Seldon, to do that forever. And Don's like, what are you talking about? And RF's like, oh, I don't, like, the PR guy is like, it's a huge hit. They want another bow. This is incredible. This is going to be the biggest movie ever. And RF's like, oh, I don't know. It's all getting really big and out of control. I'm not sure who I'm loyal to. And Don is like, sir, I will fucking kill you. But they're doing the bows. And then Cosmo, I think, is the one who, like, has the idea to do the curtain pull. So Lena says, I'm giving a speech this time. And she goes out and gives the speech. And they're
and
like,
everyone's like,
that's not what you sounded
that's
like
not
in
what
the
your
movie.
Voice is. What's happening?
Sing a song, Lena. And Lena's like, oh, my God. And so she
Cosmo
says, what am I going to do?
Tells RF and Don his idea, but not Kathy. Then Don is like, Kathy, you go out there and sing for Lena. I demand it. And she's like, all right, but never talk to me again. I'm like, why do we need to have this drama? Just tell her what's going to happen. But so then she goes out and, you know what we never talked about? Singing in the Rain.
Honestly, not a huge story point, but a lovely dance.
After Good Morning, he drops her off and is like, wow, I'm singing and dancing in the rain. I love her.
He tells the cab driver, you go home without me, and he's doing a big thing. And then a cop is like, you're not allowed to dance in the street and have so much joy. And he's like, I'm singing and dancing in the rain. And he gives his umbrella to a man without an umbrella.
Mm-hmm. but so now Kathy's gonna sing A Singin' in the Rain again. So they're like, oh, Lena, what are you gonna sing? Or the conductor asks, and she's like, Singin' in the Rain. Oh, sorry, I did a lean back because she leans back to the curtain to hear Kathy tell her what she's gonna sing. And then she does it again for the key.
Yeah, he's like, and in what key? A flat.
So
I didn't do the lean, but you know the character
it wouldn't have mattered. So then she's singing, and then the Cosmo, Dawn, and RF are like dancing backstage, and then they start pulling the curtain up.
And everyone's laughing and laughing, but yeah. Lena is just, you know, she's so committed. She's still performing and singing.
And then
Cosmo goes,
like,
and tags out with Kathy.
Oh, yeah. So then she realizes that everyone knows, and she runs away.
And Kathy's like, what is going on? She's overwhelmed. She runs away.
She runs
away.
And
Dawn gets up there and he says, stop that woman! Ladies and gentlemen, that's the woman you heard singing and speaking tonight. That's the real star of the picture. It's Kathy Seldon.
And then she's crying. And then he sings to her.
Lucky star.
And then she sings back. And that's Singin' in the Rain.
And then the end of the movie is the two of them standing in front of a billboard for a movie called Singin' in the Rain, starring Dawn Lockwood and Kathy Seldon. And you're like, what does that mean? And then it's over.
What does it mean?
The depression is coming. It is 1928. What does their future hold? We'll never know. But it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about my favorite Cosmo joke also, which is when they say they're going to turn the Dueling Cavalier into a talking picture. And then Cosmo says, well, I guess I'm out of a job. It's time to start suffering and write that symphony. And then RF says, no, you're going to write the music for the new musical pictures. And he's like, oh, it's time to stop suffering and finally write that symphony. And I think it's supposed to be implied then that he wrote the Beautiful Girls commercial. That's why he's on set.
Mm. Yes.
Anyway, great movie.
Mm-hmm.
What more is there to say?
Nothing.
Well, we probably should have spoken about Singin' in the Rain in sequence, but... You know,
no.
They used milk. Isn't that interesting?
No, they didn't.
I think it's partially milk.
Okay, partially.
I think it was a combination of milk and water so that it would read more.
That's just crazy.
Well, because it is, like, you notice that it's very white, the water that's, like, coming out of the thing.
Not that white.
It's milk, pretty white. The water coming out of the gutter.
It smells so bad. Why would they do that?
I don't think it was fully milk, but I think it was a combination of milk and water. Let's see. Did they use milk in Singin' in the Rain? Wow, Google is not guessing correctly what I'm about to Google.
Why not? I would think that's the most Googled thing.
I know. All of the guesses were weird. When I said, did they... Oh, now I can't get it back because it knows that I Googled, did they use milk? Did
they
use
milk in Singin' in the Rain?
To make bread? For dairy cows? For beef?
He had to backlight all the rain and then had to put front light on the performer because you can't photograph rain and see it.
Ah.
There have been a lot of stories about how we put milk in the water so you could see the rain. That's
you
reading
this
not
Radio Times
true.
Article? It says.
No, I'm reading an article.
Oh, but
on
he did have a fever. That is true.
Well, so there was no milk.
It was draped in black tarpaulin, so he would come out of the tarpaulin into the daylight and just lie in the sunlight, kind of bake this fever out of him, go back in and start again.
That was not a real thing I was reading.
Are you reading the Radio Times article?
No.
Oh, what are you reading?
Well, I'm not reading anything anymore, but I was reading something in Medium. Felt more like a blog post than an article.
Oh, I was going to try. I tried to read that too, but I couldn't. It was like, sign up for free. And I was like, no.
I just hit the arrow.
I think I'm reading the source material for the blog post, though.
But anyway, so there was no milk in this movie. And
yeah, just lighting.
Good for them. I'm glad that they didn't have to get milk on their clothes. Okay.
That is not Debbie Reynolds singing. That's so interesting.
Yes, it is, but not for Would You, the one song where she's dubbing someone else, which I find very ironic.
Yeah. Yes, it is. There's something metatextual about this for me that's like very interesting, because the fact that it, like, you know, Dawn's public persona is kind of a sham, and then it ends with the poster for this movie with Dawn and Debbie. But it's like, is that a happy ending? Like, their fame personas are sort of a sham. So is that like, this whole thing is just as packaged as the Dawn you met at the beginning? Or is it like, Dawn at the end gets to live off that, like, now he gets to make this movie where he tells his real story? I don't know.
I don't know if the implication is that they're making this exact movie. It could just be that the title song is Singing in the Rain, and maybe Singing in the Rain would make more sense in that movie than it does in this one.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't know. I just think it's interesting. There's this element of like, this is all, everything feels a little bit phony on purpose. Like, that's something that I also think about, is like, not totally, but something being weird about that first love scene and about him saying he loves her, like, on the sound. Like, he needs to make it look cinematic when he confesses his love. Like, there is something about, there's something a little bit cynical about artifice in this, but also something that, like, embraces it and loves it and, you know, like, the Broadway rhythm dance sequence, all artifice, but kind of lovely and delightful. But also, there's a little bit of undermining of it in this that I think makes this movie interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. You'll probably cut out a bunch of the stuff that happened at the end of this, but maybe you won't.
You know I won't.
Okay. Well, sorry this release.
This is the stuff that lost our audience at the end. Needs to hear.
Is us reading Medium posts. Well, thanks to just our parents for listening to the end. And tune in next week when we talk about Newsies.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for listening. Dude, the part of it that you did listen to, if you didn't make it to the end, I'm sending out a thank you to you.
Thank you.
But our parents will know that you've been thanked. Yeah. You'll feel it.
All right.
Bye.
Hoopty doody doodle. Moses supposes his toes are roses, but Moses supposes erroneously. For Moses, he knows his toes aren't roses, as Moses supposes his toes to be. Moses supposes his toes are roses. Moses supposes erroneously. As Moses supposes his toes to be. Roses, 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 roses. When Moses supposes his toes could be a lily or a taffy daffy dilly. It's gotta be a rose, cause it rhymes with Moses.